versus City of Euless. Just one second. Before you start your time, Mr. Rosbach, I want you to know that you have set a record in this court for the longest reply brief ever filed. You took 13,000 words and used about one page to respond to the cross-appeal issue and then used the other, I suppose, limits of our rule to re-urge and repeat your brief, which I really find inappropriate. But I suppose you were within our rules, so you filed two 60-page briefs and have beat this to death. Go ahead, sir.
May it please the Court. My name is Eric Rosbach, and I represent plaintiff appellant Jose Merced. This case is not just about whether Mr. Merced will be able to worship in his own way in his own home, though it is about that. It's also about whether people of all religious faiths will be able to worship and ordain ministers without unnecessary government interference. What this case is not about is the subjective intent of the Euless City Council in 1974. It doesn't matter.
At this very expedited trial, and did you participate in the trial?
No, we were not involved until appeal.
But as I understand it, the trial took possibly 3 hours. The parties were limited somewhat. But in the record, are we going to find sufficient evidence about problems caused by slaughter of animals inside the home and vis-a-vis slaughter or butchering of animals killed out in the forest and brought into the home, that sort of stuff? Are you telling us this record is fully developed to rule on this important constitutional issue?
Yes, we think it actually is pretty developed in the sense that there's the amended pretrial order. Judge McBride required the parties to get together and stipulate to a large number of facts, and that amended pretrial order had quite a bit of detail about the allegations and cleared away a lot of the issues.
Well, also, for example, the city says that there's stench and filth, those words, and that result from this. Is there anything in the record about, quote, stench and filth caused by the slaughter of this large number of animals in a home?
Yes, Your Honor. The stipulations I was just mentioning, the defendant agreed to, said that they had no evidence that there were any stench or filth problems based on Mr. Merced's activities. And same thing with the fly attraction and other issues. I think that the city is resting on the idea that they can speculate that there may be problems in the future and that therefore they can regulate this now, and they've briefed that and been pretty clear about their position. So they're asking for something a little broader than we see this direct problem. They're saying we want to, identify a compelling interest, and we can invoke that and sort of rest on our laurels.
Do you seek for us to strike down 10.3 and 10.65? Is that the scope of the relief you seek?
We're actually not seeking to have any of the ordinances struck down. We're just seeking an injunction against their application to Mr. Merced. So this is not a facial challenge to these statutes, ordinances rather.
So you're not facially challenging the fact that, as in your brief, that they have an exception for the killing of mammals by hunters and trappers, but on their face, but not for other religious groups or anybody else?
Well, there are facial problems with it, but the relief that we're seeking is just the injunction, just like in Lukumi,
The narrow relief, the injunction.
Exactly. We just want the narrow relief that Mr. Merced be allowed to himself engage in it. We're not seeking to get rid of the statutes, the ordinances, rather, in general.
Not, but these particular two ordinances, an injunction against the application of these two ordinances. Is that correct? Both of them?
I believe there's actually five ordinances that were put in the supplement to the amended pretrial order that were listed up and agreed on by the parties. There's sort of a back and forth with Judge McBride. He was unhappy with the state of the amended pretrial order, and so he asked them to tell me, you know, exactly what ordinances are at issue, and there's a list.
So you stand by that, all five of those ordinances. It was unclear to me which of the two or three or five or one.
Well, if you look at some of the pretrial hearings, you can see that at the trial level there's a lot of confusion about what ordinances exactly the city was trying to apply to Mr. Merced. Mr. Merced said, the police told him you can't do the killing, or you need to get a permit to go do the killing. So he went to the city hall and said, I want to get a permit. So he, and they told him there's no such thing. There's no permit. You can't do that. There's sort of this kind of you go first thing that happened at some of the pretrial hearings, and I'd encourage the court to read the pretrial transcripts that are in the record about that, because it did seem like Judge McBride was sort of asking plaintiff's counsel to say which ordinances the defense counsel was relying on in their case. Does that make sense?
Right. So the relief that you want us to grant in this court today is what specifically, sir?
An injunction against those five ordinances that are in the record as applied to Mr. Merced's practice of animal killing. That's it. Exactly like Lukumi. I actually wanted to focus on the TRFA claim first, and by TRFA I mean the Texas Religious Freedom Act.
I understand there's a decision pending in the Texas Supreme Court on the Texas Religious Freedom Act. Do you know the status of that?
Yes, that case was argued 2 years ago, which means, based on I heard the colloquy with the last appeal, means you could guess about another year until you get a decision, and it's just pending right now, and we don't know of any other cases in the pipeline, so to speak. On the TRFA claim, I think that actually one thing that is common to all of the Texas precedent on this is that they all recite the history of Sherbert, Smith, Bernie, and then the overturning of the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and then the efforts of various states, including Texas, to come back to it. And they all invoke federal precedent. And in fact, if you look at TRFA itself, it says that you are supposed to, in certain instances, look at federal precedent in terms of interpreting TRFA. So I think that this court would be able to go ahead and rule on it without having to wait for the bar case to come back.
Well, how does the Flores case apply in this situation, sometimes called the City of Bernie case?
I would say it doesn't apply at all. That was a 14th Amendment case, sort of part of the trend of a few cases in the 90s to roll back some federal statutes that were seen as overbroad by the court in terms of equal protection enforcement, the Section 5 of the 14th Amendment. With respect to this court's precedent, the Mayfield case is a good one in the Fifth Circuit, because it lays out exactly how one would examine this. It looks at the specific religious exercises that are at issue, and then it determines what is the objective burden on those. So it doesn't look at what's the subjective burden, how does it make somebody feel that you put this burden on them, but instead you look at what's the actual burden on there. In this case, that's the specific practices that are at issue are goat and turtle killing. And the burden is prohibition backed up by criminal prosecution. And that's also in the stipulations that I mentioned earlier that the city has said that it will criminally prosecute Mr. Merced.
The city seems to base a lot of its argument on he moved to the situation. What precedent is there that says that if you come into a place that doesn't allow you to practice your religion, that's on you, so to speak?
I don't know of any, and I'd welcome you to ask that of opposing counsel. I would say that the Shad case, this court's precedent in the Islamic Center against Starkville case would indicate that, and Yoder actually itself talks a lot about how the Amish would essentially be forced to move to another jurisdiction if they were required to comply with Wisconsin's rules about school attendance. So I think that there's a lot of constitutional case law out there that says that you can't just say go somewhere else to get your rights.
Is there even one case that holds as the city urges?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
What would be a least restrictive means for the city to achieve the end it desires and still allow the practice of this religion?
Well, I think there's a number of options that the city could look at. One would be a permitting option, sort of similar to, you know, in the free speech context, you have the time, manner, place restrictions that can go on permits. I think that you could have that, you know, within reasonable bounds, of course, but so they could do that. Mr. Merced is willing to, you know, quadruple bag the remains or take it to the dump or whatever. You have a conditional permit that says, you know, we'll give you the permit if you agree, you know, when you're getting the permit to engage in these practices that meets the what the city has said is its real interests here, which is they're concerned about the public health effect of disposal of animal carcasses. And Mr. Merced is perfectly willing to dispose of animal carcasses in a way that meets that public health interest. But the ban on killing is kind of a blunt instrument here, and it doesn't actually hit the, you know, the rule doesn't fit the rationale. So I think that with respect to the killing aspect, they've actually said, for example, transcript 104 and elsewhere in the record, actually, unfortunately, don't have the record site, but the docket number 46, page 9, both of those, they disclaim any interest in the act of killing itself. It's the disposal of the carcasses and the public health part of it that's the real interest. So I think there's sort of a menu of options, and we described a few in our brief in terms of how they could respond to that.
Now, in your brief at note 16 at page 39, you admit that preemption was not raised in the district court about federal statutes permitting ritual slaughter. What are the parameters of those statutes?
Well, the ritual slaughter statutes exist mainly for the fact that for Orthodox Jewish people and Muslims, they have to slaughter animals actually in exactly the same fashion that Mr. Merced does, which is severing the carotid artery. And so that statute was meant to basically define for the federal government that is a humane form of sacrifice.
And I doubt it does, but does the statute pertain to doing it in your home?
That I don't know right now, Your Honor. I don't remember if there was an aspect about where it was happening. I'm guessing it was just about the method. Going back to the TRFA claim, I think, you know, one other thing to think about with respect to TRFA is that it's not really meant to be a gotcha statute. It's meant to be remedial, and if you look at the kinds of remedies that are in the statute, it limits damages to $10,000. There's actually a 60-day remedial period where you have to sort of give them fair warning. And then they can remedy the activity, basically lift the government-created burden on the religious exercise. So it's something where it, you know, realizes that governments aren't going to be prescient and know about every single possible conflict that could come along, but then they can realize that there's a way to lift that burden.
Now, of course, we always seek to avoid constitutional questions, and you're urging that we look to TRFA first and then not even have to get to the free exercise clause?
I think the court can reach both, but the court would be perfectly fine just reaching the TRFA argument and, applying constitutional avoidance. Obviously, the court has an interest in avoiding sometimes opining on state law statutes, but I think that constitutional avoidance is definitely something to think about here. Arguing just about the free exercise claim, I think that there's it's basically the answer is dictated by Lukumi. All of the kinds of claims that were raised by Ulis in this litigation were the same ones that Hialeah brought up, and as our briefing showed, each one of those points can be responded to with a part of Lukumi.
Your chart in page 11 of your reply brief, where do I specifically find these exceptions, these written exceptions?
We do have cites on the next page.
Okay. Are there all?
LUPA 12. That should be
but it's
fully.
Kind of, it's a global site. So oh. Where is the Hunter site? Do you know?
I believe that's the Texas Parks and Wildlife Code. But I can also supplement briefing.
That's not necessary.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock for the City of Ulis. One second. Does that belong to council? Is that yours?
Oh, no.
All right. Just give that to the bailiff over here, please. What case that's from.
May it please the court. My name is Bradford Bullock, and I'm here with Mick McCamey, who's seated at the council table. We're here for the City of Ulis. I know that this is being recorded, so for a point of reference for those who might listen, Ulis is part of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area. I think the main question before you today is whether Ulis's animal control ordinance is neutral and generally applicable. And I think Ulis demonstrated that it is a neutral and generally applicable law.
Well, tell us, sir, because to me, and it's a point raised in the Supreme Court opinion, tell us how it differs to A, cut the throat of a goat in your home, as opposed to B, bring a deer into your home and cut its throat or whatever and butcher it and put the remains in the garbage or whatever you do with what's left over when you finish butchering a deer.
Well, first of all, as I understand the scenario, we're talking about an animal that has already been killed, that's being brought into the city, that's dead. In that respect, I mean, it's really no different than bringing home any other thing from the grocery store.
Well, certainly it is. If you bring home a fillet from the grocery store, you're just bringing home a fillet in a nice little package. I'm talking about you're out in the woods, mm-hmm. You shoot a deer, you bring the deer home immediately, you butcher it in your home, there's a great deal of blood in your home or in your yard or wherever you do it, you string it up to the tree in your backyard and remove the venison or whatever. How is that different from what this man wants to do in his home?
Well, what this man wants to do in his home is to keep live animals,
well,
a large number of live animals.
He doesn't keep them more than 4 hours. And, again, we're going to need to see the record. But what's wrong with bringing some live animals to your home? The city allows you to have 4 live chickens in your home before you kill them for Sunday lunch.
Right.
So tell me what is the difference, the real true difference as far as your brief says the, quote, stench and filth, close quote, involved between this sort of ritual slaughter by Mr. Merced as opposed to a hunter bringing home and finishing butchering a deer that he shot out in the forest.
I think it's the keeping of livestock in a residential area.
What's the proof about how long the livestock are kept in Mr. Merced's home?
I think it's up to 4 hours. That's the testimony.
What's the problem with that?
I think the testimony from our experts was that even in that amount of time, there's going to be a significant amount of feces and urine, there's going to be noise, and the ULIS ordinances provide for the containment of feces and urine. They provide for a limitation on the amount of noise.
Well, what's in the record as to what Mr. Marced says he does about the feces and urine?
I think he says that he cleans it up. But it doesn't change the fact that we have, number one, a prohibition on the keeping of livestock within 100 feet of residential properties. It doesn't change the fact that
what are defined in the ULIS ordinance as livestock?
Cows, goats, sheep. It's in section 10, I think 10.3 of the ordinance, and it lists out what constitutes an estray or livestock, and it's
list out what
it lists out what constitutes an estray. It's a term of art or livestock, and it includes cows and sheep and goats. Other animals of that nature, and it's their part of the record. Another important point is the amount of land that is required in order to keep those types of animals. The ordinance requires a half acre of land per animal in order to
provide. If you're raising those animals, but if you're bringing them home for less than 4 hours.
Well, to keep or impound those animals, you need to have adequate land. You need to have adequate provisions for those animals. And again, we're talking about a suburban urban subdivision, a home on less than a quarter acre of land, the kind of home that most people live in. And the purpose of that
and
is to separate.
Record.
Yes.
That's in the record, the size of his lot.
No, the size of his lot I think is not. I think he talked about, I think there is something in the record to the effect of the size of his home. I think it's a 3 or 4 bedroom home. I believe that is in the record, but the size of the specific lot is not. What is in the record is what is required in terms of the land that is required to keep those animals. And certainly, Mr. Merced adduced no evidence that he owns a property that's 3 acres or 4 acres large, based on the number of livestock that he wants to keep at his home. And I think, again, we want to. I'd like to talk about the neutrality aspect and the general applicability aspect, because I think Mr. Merced's brief, we get lost in some of the weeds there. What it requires for content neutrality is if the object of a law, and that's what the main difference between ULIS's ordinances and Hialeah's ordinances. Judge, you asked about what difference does it make if Mr. Merced came to town versus ordinances that were specifically targeted at him. And I think it makes a big difference, because what the law on neutrality says, and this is from Lukumi, is that if the object of a law is to infringe on or restrict practices because of their religious motivation, then it's not neutral. And so what it means in this case is that we don't have a law that was passed with the purpose of infringing on or restricting Mr. Merced's practices.
I don't believe that claim is made in this case, is it? I mean, the ordinances were passed, what, in 74?
That's correct.
I don't believe they're claiming that these were designed to prevent his religion.
At a minimum, they're claiming that the effect of it.
Right.
Is. But the law on neutrality is still the same. It still has to be the object. Whether
Does it have to be the object under TRFA?
Well, and under TRFA, it's got to be a substantial burden.
A burden. It doesn't have to be the motive.
Right. But there has to be a substantial burden on the religion and not a particular practice.
And you don't believe this record supports a substantial burden on the practices when they can't ordain a priest or whatever they would call that have a successor priest in their faith tradition?
No, I don't think so. And the reason I don't think so is because it is a specific element of the practice. Mr. Merced testified. He testified that he was able to practice virtually every other aspect of his religion in his home.
You really don't believe that precluding initiation of new priests in this religion is a substantial burden on that religion?
Your Honor, I think the law on substantial burden is that it's not substantial if it's incidental by way of a law of general application. And that comes back to the manner in which this ordinance was passed and enforced. This is a law of general application. The key in Lukumi, I believe, was that we had laws where all of the other types of killing were exempted. Virtually everything was exempted. The only thing that was prohibited, virtually the only thing that was prohibited in Lukumi, was ritualistic killings by Santeria adherents. The same killing could be accomplished for kosher slaughter, and that was okay. But if it was a Santeria adherent, then that was not okay. And that is the difference. I mean, that's why it's not a substantial burden, because we have a law that was passed before Mr. Merced came to town, so it's not targeted at Santeria. There's no evidence that it was. And yet it applies regardless of the motivation of the person who wants to keep the animals in their home. It applies regardless of the motivation of the individual who wants to kill them. It doesn't matter. The motivation is irrelevant. If a killing is allowed for one purpose, it's allowed. If it's prohibited, it's prohibited. And that, I think, was one of the keys in Lukumi, was that it looked into the justification of the individual. And that's what made it a crime or not a crime.
Well, I think we can all agree this is not Lukumi. If it were, we wouldn't have to have argument, would we?
I agree.
This is a totally different situation. And then in addition to the First Amendment, you know, the city of Euless, Texas, has its own Texas statute it's got to put up with, which is TRFA.
That's true.
Which is even more liberal as far as protecting religion than the First Amendment.
It is. But again, the law on substantial burden is the same. And if it is a... I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you, do you concede that the killing of mammals by hunters and trappers is allowed in the city?
Well, I suppose it depends. I mean, I think it's not part of the record, but I don't think hunting would be allowed if it involved the discharge of a firearm. I think that's governed by state law.
But it might not be firearms. I'm asking you, is there a specific written exception that permits the killing of mammals by hunters and trappers?
I don't believe there's a specific exception that for that. I think the specific exception that I'm familiar with refers to table fowl.
Okay. Is there a specific exception that applies to the killing of mammals and rodents as a particular category of mammals by homeowners?
Yes.
So you can kill rodents?
You can kill rodents. And
is there a specific exception that allows you to kill injured or ill mammals by the city?
Yes, absolutely.
Is there a specific exception that allows you to kill rabid or vicious animals?
Absolutely.
Is there a specific exception that allows you to kill fewer fowl?
Yes.
Is there a specific exception that allows you to kill fish?
I don't believe there's a fish exception. I think that's governed by state law.
Is there an exception in practice to allow veterinarians to kill mammals?
Only in certain areas. Not in residential areas such as Mr. Merced. That's prohibited by Euless's zoning law.
Is there a specific exception that allows reptiles to be killed by veterinarians in certain areas?
No, it would be the same. It's that veterinarians are allowed to operate in certain zoned areas, not in residential areas.
Is there a specific exception that allows homeowners to kill reptiles, snakes, and vermin?
Vermin, I don't know about reptiles and snakes specific. Could be, but certainly vermin, pests, yes. Yes, and again, all of those exceptions, the problem with the exceptions in Lukumi was that the exceptions undercut the purpose of the ordinance. Here, the exceptions that you talked about, the killing of a rabid dog or a diseased animal, that promotes the public health. Certainly we can't argue that allowing rabid or diseased animals to either run wild or be, I mean, they certainly pose a danger to the citizenry. And what we have here is really a content-neutral prohibition. There's no question that certain killings are allowed in certain contexts. But I think the rule that Mr. Merced is arguing for is that if you allow any killing, then you have to allow the killing that he says he needs to perform as part of his religion. I think that allows him to create a law unto himself that was prohibited in Smith.
Does the record establish that he was denied a permit of any sort?
Well, I think the record establishes that he asked for a permit and that there is no such permit to be issued. So, I mean, technically he was denied, but there's no evidence that there's a permitting process or that one has ever been granted for anyone.
So this does not involve a narrowly tailored time, place, and manner exception. Is that correct?
No, I think these are narrowly tailored time, place, manner exceptions.
Now, is there any, and as I understand it, there is no specific ordinance about if you bring in a deer or other large animal that you've killed and butcher it in your home, there are no special rules or about what you do with the carcass, the bones, the entrails, that sort of thing?
That's incorrect.
Sir?
That's incorrect. Actually, the ordinance, Chapter 10, Section, let's see. Well, I don't, it's part of the, it's been part of the record in I think pages 545 through 560. I think that's the ordinance itself. And the ordinance specifically provides for proper disposal methods.
All right, tell us about that.
It provides that you have to properly dispose, and it references other state law and other ordinances. The animal control ordinance itself doesn't provide for trash disposal and whatnot. So it references state law. So, for example, there was testimony that it would be illegal to dump the carcass of an animal in a stream. And there was testimony, in fact, that was performed by Mr. Merced and his congregants.
Sorry, go ahead.
That was it.
But so if you butcher a deer at your home, what does either the ordinance or the incorporated state law require you to do with the portions that you don't keep in your home to eat?
The ordinance itself is silent as to the specifics. It just says you must properly dispose of it in terms of, in compliance with other applicable law, state
right.
and local law.
What would that be?
Well, it's not part of the record. These other applicable laws are not part of the record, and so I can't specifically tell you. I would hate to misrepresent to the court what they might be. They're just not in the record. But there is a requirement that they be disposed of properly, whatever that constitutes. But again,
well, he could do that.
Are they published? Can we find them?
Yes.
We could take judicial notice of them.
Yes.
But he could do that. Yeah, I mean, if he complied with all of these incorporated or reference laws, such as double bagging or whatever, and taking him to a city dump and that sort of thing.
Yes, he absolutely could. But what he still wants to do, though, that doesn't comply with that, and that those issues don't touch on, is the keeping of a large number of animals and the keeping of specific kinds of animals that are prohibited.
All right, so that's your main thrust, it seems, through your argument here today, that what really concerns the city of Euless is keeping goats or lambs and possibly even a cow, which one of the briefs says would be a type of hooved animal that could be killed in this initiation. That's your main concern, keeping them in a home prior to their being killed.
I think that, as we pointed out in a brief, Your Honor, that's correct. We don't have to get to the issue of the killing of animals. We don't have to get to the issue of the method of the kill, because what Mr. Merced proposes to do is to violate other portions of the animal control ordinance, irrespective of the no slaughter provision. He wants to keep an excess number of animals that wouldn't be permitted for anybody else, and he wants to keep a kind of animal that wouldn't be permitted for anybody else, regardless of their justification. If I want to have a barbecue because I'm having a family reunion at my house, and I want to have 6 goats there, and I want to kill them and barbecue them in my home, I couldn't do that. It's a secular motivation, but it wouldn't matter. I think one of the important points that I'd like to, distinctions that I'd like to make is, at oral argument in the Lacuma case, the counsel for the city had to concede that even if a slaughter, a ritual sacrifice performed by a Santeria adherent occurred in a licensed, zoned, properly permitted slaughterhouse, it couldn't happen in Hialeah because of the purpose, the justification for the killing. That parallel does not exist here. Slaughterhouses are not allowed in the city of Euless, regardless of the justification.
Can you bring a horse for a birthday party, pony rides to your house for two or three hours?
I don't think so. I don't have the livestock definition in front of me. If horse is part of that, then you could not. And certainly there's no evidence in the record that those types of things happen
Okay, there's no evidence, children's petting zoo, birthday parties, you know, we're all familiar with sheep and animals and very common for a few hours.
Right. There's no evidence that the city allows that. There's no evidence that those things go on. They may. That doesn't mean that the city permits it, though.
Well, what if the city had a permitting procedure where they had that if you were going to bring a hooved animal onto your property, that you had to get a permit, and if it was for the purpose of this sort of ritual slaughter, that the animals could not be on the property any sooner than 15 minutes before the ceremony? Couldn't that be done?
It certainly could be done. There's no question that something like that could be done. The question, though, is whether or not the motives, whether or not the justifications for the city's ordinance, I think that goes back to the strict scrutiny analysis. If the motives and the object of the law is a sham, then certainly then the court can look behind those legislative motives. But if it's not a sham, then they're due deference.
But a sham isn't required for due deference under the Texas Religious Freedom Act, is it?
That's right. And there's no evidence that these
were
sham motives.
That's right. It's not required. In other words, the Texas Act, you just look to see if it's a substantial burden. And if it is, the least restrictive means has to be applied. Isn't that it? So you don't look at whether it was a sham. You just look at the effect on the religion.
Well, I think it's a strict scrutiny analysis under TURPA.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But you start with strict scrutiny. You don't go through the first phase that you would go through under the free exercise clause.
Well, I'll defer to you, Judge. I will just...
Don't defer to me. I'm just asking you. You're the Texas
lawyer.
Well, voice.
I think that they would have to show that the purpose of the ordinance is a sham, and I think that in the absence of that Ulysses' stated goals of protecting the public health and safety are due deference.
You're saying that to apply the Texas Religious Freedom Act, they first have to show a sham.
Not first, but at some point they have to show that once they've shown that there is a substantial burden, then the burden shifts to the government to show a compelling interest.
All right.
Part of that compelling interest is to show the motives of the act, of the legislation itself.
All right. We have your argument. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Rebuttal, Mr. Rosbach.
A few brief factual points about the record. I believe section 104 is the one about raising the animals, and it refers to keeping and maintaining. And if you read that statute, it's very clear that it's about, you know, proper fencing and, you know, keeping them away. It's clearly meant for long-term maintaining of livestock, and it has nothing to do with what's in the record here. Also, the city stipulated, again, in those stipulations that were adopted by the district court as part of its fact findings, that it had no evidence of any animal being kept at Mr. Merced's house for more than 4 hours. Another quick point, the exceptions here do undermine the public health. Some of them obviously don't. Killing a rabid animal, I think you could say, does not undermine the exception for the purpose of the free exercise clause, plaintiff's burden part of the analysis. But grandma's chickens running around the yard do, both for the keeping and maintaining part of it and for the killing part. If grandma can kill the chicken, that is something that undermines it. And in the Fraternal Order of Police case cited in the briefs, the Black Hawk case, the Tenafly case, they only had, you know, one exception in Fraternal Order of Police. So, you know, if you have one exception that undermines the rule, then it shows that there's an objective devaluation. And that's a point I also wanted to get to, was just that, you know, there's no, they keep trying to say it's about intentional subjective discrimination by government officials, but it's actually about the objective devaluation. If you look at footnote 30 in the Tenafly decision, it makes that distinction very clear. And Judge McConnell's decision in the Colorado Christian case, also cited in our brief, makes very clear that that's sufficient to show a free exercise violation, but it's not necessary. It's a condition to making a free exercise claim. Let's see, briefly, again, proper disposal, we're happy to comply with whatever rules, not if we have to take it to Timbuktu, but if we can take it to them, we'll be happy to comply with that.
What is the argument about, well, we don't want this number of live animal inside a neighborhood, et cetera, and the noise they might make, or the what if instead of having the religion in the home, there was a proper requirement that, you know, that the religion take place on a property that was large enough so that it wouldn't conflict with those living around it. For example, in the Supreme Court case, they wanted to build a church, have their own church. And I understand here it's in the home, but how does that cut against the free exercise of religion to be at least required to not have it right in a neighborhood?
Well, in this case, and I'm not sure that that's completely accurate on Lukumi, as our briefing and the record shows, these are sort of household deities, a bit like Greek and Roman mythology, where they had little gods that they put over the hearth, and those were sort of the resident deities. It's actually referred to also in the Old Testament. You hear about Rachel taking, her household gods with her. So I think that that's something where it's located there, and that's the only, he can only do it in his home. So essentially telling him you can't do the sacrifice in your own home means you have to move your home out of Euless. And that's a pretty big burden in our opinion. If the court doesn't have any more questions, I'd be happy to cede the remaining 45 seconds.
All right. We're going to be in a brief recess, but just for your own benefit, I want it noted that by saying grandma killing chickens, you weren't discriminating against grandmothers, and that you recognize others might want to.
We're happy to have grandma kill chickens. We just think that Mr. Merced should have the rights as well.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your arguments. We'll be in recess for 15 minutes.